Good morning, everybody. Welcome to this next conversation in the series that Working Beauty has been offering the community for a few years now. We have significant conversations, and this is intended to be summative and collaborative and interpersonal. So don't feel like it's a lecture series. It really is a conversation. So everybody here comes with subjective experiences and objective science. We have an opportunity to share with each other. And we're going to start out. We have four presenters. And we hope that the reason we're starting now is so that we can get through the presentations, honor our presenters with sufficient time to get through what they want, but still have time to discuss and question and interact. So we're going to start with Al McCabe, and some of them are technologically assisted, and some of them are just charismatically assisted. I think you'll find that Al is a balance of both, and he's eager to both share his images and his vision. So let's get started, and I think he'll tell you that you're welcome to interrupt and question and share your own perspectives. Anything else? Oh, we also, if you have garden, food growing, permaculture infrastructure, we're trying to put together an assets map. And that activity is happening in the back. We'd like a number on the map so we can find you geographically, and some comments about your successes, failures, challenges. You know, we all pin our hopes on small groups of like-minded people, the movers and the shakers. I want to add the sowers and the growers to that list, and you're among them. Thank you. Al McKay.
Okay, I was told I need to stand back here, so we're being recorded, so watch your language. Okay, so I'm talking about permaculture today. I have B going to start. So I have 30 minutes, and there's no way I can give you a truly understanding of what permaculture is in just 30 minutes, but I'm going to try to at least give you, if you don't know what it is, at least you can walk away and understand when somebody says permaculture, what it's about. So basically I'm going to go over three areas. What is permaculture, what it can do, and why do we need it? You know, it's not just a fun thing. It's actually something we really need. Okay, B, next. Okay, so permaculture was first developed, and the term was coined by Bill Mollison and David Holmgren back in 1978. Bill Mollison has since passed away, but David is still very active in permaculture. The main idea that they put forth is that permaculture is a system of agricultural and social design principles centered on simulating or directly utilizing the patterns and features observed in natural ecosystems. So what does that mean?
Mimicking nature.
Yeah, that's it. You basically, they gave suggestions on design principles to use in your garden, on your farm, or it doesn't even have to be that. It could be any social system at all. That if you use these principles in your design, you will end up with a sustainable system that you can actually let go, and you'll see what I mean by that. It's just, you're following what nature did. You're not working against nature. Okay? B, next. Okay, so it's been 38 years, and I wanted to bring this up because since this time, the term permaculture is kind of morphed. Some people will say anything that is sustainable is automatically permaculture. But, you know, that is confusing. It's not the original intent. The original intent of permaculture was it is a set of principles used to guide you in your planning of whatever you're planning, of your garden. And what we'll be talking about is the garden here. So just wanted to point that out. A lot of times you'll hear people say, oh, this is permaculture. You know, it's a word. So for most people like us, for like me, who have been working with permaculture for a while, I tend to go to the original. It's the design principles. Okay, so at the core of permaculture are the what's called the permaculture ethics. This is care of the earth, care of the people, and only taking your fair share. That's the core. This is not about hoarding or trying to come up with ways of taking over the world. You're just trying to take care of the earth, you're taking care of people, and you're sharing what you have. Okay? The next is, these are the 12 main principles of permaculture. Now, I'm not going to go through each one of these here now because I could talk for hours on each one of these. But that's not the purpose here. The idea is to let you know that there are a set of principles that are core to permaculture. Oh, just remembered. I actually have a handout here. Let me get it in just a second. I actually have a copy of these principles that everyone can take with them. Okay, B, you want to go to the next one? So the main idea is if you take the core ethics of permaculture and you apply these 12 principles, that's the core of permaculture. Now, that's not all of permaculture. This is just the core. Because there's a lot more to permaculture than just this. There's the whole idea of zoning, and it will be something I'd love to have a workshop on. Well, probably next year to go into this into more detail. Okay? So, B? So, I'm going to give you an example of what we mean by permaculture. Now, this is somebody who lives in the suburbs here who did not have a permaculture set of mind. They said, I wanted a patio. So, they go out. They put a patio on the back of their house without thinking about how it affects everything else. So they come and they put this in. Come June, they discover, oh, well, this is too hot. I didn't think about that. The sun is going to bake me here. And then later on, come monsoons, they discovered, oh, I just blocked the natural drainage on my land. Yeah. So I'm causing more problems. You know, they didn't think this through. Now, if there was a permaculture person thinking of this, they would have said, oh, well, let's look at what's going on. What does the sun do? What does the wind do? What's going to happen over the series of the seasons? What can I do if I wanted to put a patio in? What can I do to get the most out of it? So if like a permaculture person was going to come in here, they would have thought, oh yeah, I'm going to need shade. So they would have built this patio so that the water that falls on it runs to that tree that they're going to plant. They would have thought about, well, this drainage problem, I can do something to direct it also to that tree so that when we have the rains come, you don't have to water the tree at all. And while you're at it, why not make that tree a fruit tree? Let's start putting some fruit in there too, you know. Stacking functions, that's one of the big things that's mentioned in permaculture. You want anything you do to have multiple purposes. And so does that give you just a vague idea what permaculture is about here? Yeah.
Starhawk teaches TOPA, thoughtful and protracted observation. You should watch what's happening for a year before you interact with it at all.
Yep, that's principle number one on the handout I just gave you here. So, okay, the next picture. I want to give you some examples here of what permaculture can do. Now, this was a really good example because it's so visually impacted. This was in the Jordan Valley. This is in Jordan, the Jordan side of the Jordan River. And look what they started with. I mean, bare soil. You can even see the salt in it. So I know what they when they started off this, they started doing a whole series of rainwater capture, everything they could to maximize the rain that did fall there. And so you can see a picture of it, you know, 3 or 6 months later. That's the middle one up there, where they got trees in there, getting the whole process going. But look at it 3 years later. I mean, it went from that to that in 3 years by using permaculture.
Did they plant those trees, or did those trees grow naturally?
They planted the trees, yeah. But they created the environment for them to thrive by doing this earthworks. And this is another picture of the same project. And you can see where, at the start, there was just a lot of bare ground. And at the end, you can't even see the bare ground. Yeah.
This is rainwater only.
I believe so. I can't say for sure because it didn't say on the website, but I'm pretty sure it is.
And do you know what their annual rainfall is?
No, I don't.
If that's the Jordan Valley, then it's less than 0.5 inch per year.
It's pretty dry. You can see what it started with. Okay. So next, B. This is another example. This is right over here in Arizona. Look at the before and after. Before, the water was just going straight down, channeled down. And what they did is they did a series of earthworks to slow the water down, so it had time to soak into the ground. And look at the difference. Okay, I mean, it's just visually there. Next B. Now, this is a massive permaculture project done in China. This area, it's the same area up top, had a lot of overgrazing, had very low rainfall. Sound familiar? using permaculture, they were able to turn it around. Look at that place now. I'm here, you can see up top, you can see where they had a lot of erosion. They're able to stop that erosion. You can see where the trees have filled out more because they were able to capture that rain. They're using permaculture principles. Okay, this is a very important part of permaculture is you want to spend more time thinking about your system, thinking about it, observing what's going on. You spend more time thinking and planning than you actually do implementing. Now, usually people just like, okay, we'll just get it and get going. The more time you think about it, more time you look at all the things that are interacting, the less effort and time you have to spend on maintaining that system. So permaculture is about really thinking what's going on. What can you use that nature is providing to enable you to work less? There's a saying in permaculture that says work is pollution. You don't really want to do a lot of work. You want the nature to do it for you.
Work is waste.
Yeah. Okay, so I want to tell you what some of the things that Work and Beauty has done. Now, we've done rainwater harvesting workshops. And actually 2 years ago, we had Brad Lancaster here talking. Now, I don't know if people know that Brad Lancaster, it's written right in his book, he based his 8 principles of rainwater harvesting on what he learned in permaculture. He totally says what he does is permaculture. So we were teaching you parts of permaculture, although you might not have known it. Okay, the next one. Okay, then we also had the soil building workshop using biology, soil biological farming workshops. This is taught by Dr. Elaine Ingham. She was our speaker last year. Now, I think if you talk to Dr. Ingham, she wouldn't say she was doing permaculture. But if you really think about it, she was doing it without knowing it, because she was taking the time to observe what's actually going on in the soil in a natural system. How can we take what we know about what she's been studying and apply it to our gardens? So it's a very important part of permaculture. So again, we were actually teaching more permaculture here without really you knowing it there. So, okay, so what we want to do now, so this coming year, we're thinking of, well, what can we do to bring all this together? We really would like to see everyone growing. Now, if you use permaculture in our climate, it's a lot easier than if you till the soil up and try to keep it watered, and conventional farming doesn't work too well here. I can say, you know, I moved here a long time ago now, and when I first started, I'm originally from South Carolina. You don't have to worry about water, you don't have to worry about mulching, you have to worry about pulling the weeds out. Whereas here, you have to really go about it differently. You know, it took me a while. I killed a lot of plants. I admit that, I killed a lot of plants. But now I've got it down. I know how to grow. I've produced almost all of my produce for the year. I put them all up. So, I mean, I've come a long way. But I got that way because I learned about permaculture, learning to apply these principles to my garden, and it made a huge difference. Okay, so that's what I'd like to see. That's what I'm going to be doing this coming year, is showing more of how to bring everything we've learned so far, bring it all together so people can actually see results in their garden. And we're also talking about Working Beauty doing individual garden assessments, where we'll actually go out and look at people's garden and see if we can help them come up with ideas to be more productive. Okay, next. Okay, so by now you can see I feel, this is my personal opinion, that permaculture is the only way that we are going to get a local food system working here. I have to rephrase that, to get a sustainable local food system here is to use permaculture, use what nature has taught us. And that way we can grow our own food, let everyone grow local food that we can all share and be healthy with. Okay, so there's why is permaculture needed? I'm getting off a little bit on the subject here, but I'll bring it back together at the end. Is why do we need permaculture? Not only here and where we are now, but just in the whole country. And so I want to show you this picture here. And this is a picture of a sculpture. This is on an interstate rest stop in Iowa. They're showing on those pillars the depth of the topsoil and how it's been going down using conventional agriculture every year. Look at that. It started off in 1850, 1900, 1950, 75, 2000. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to see we're eating our topsoil. Now they're saying we've got 30 years left. We have to change the way we're doing agriculture, or we're not going to feed ourselves. We're totally destroying our topsoil. Okay? Yeah.
Are you saying that permaculture can be applied to large-scale farming?
Yes, it can. Yes. Any other? Okay, next, B. Okay, other thing to look at is there's a health crisis going on now, and it has a lot to do with what we're eating. Okay, so you might say, well, how does this go with permaculture? Well, if everyone here can get down to the point where they're growing their food using organic methods, using permaculture, that food is much more nutritious than what you can buy in a store. And that's a proven fact. It's just like conventional food that's grown under conventional agriculture is less nutritious than organic food. So if we bring the permaculture in and have sustainable gardening, we can help with our health problems. Okay, B, one more. And then this is when I think is the most important. You know, conventional agriculture, people.
Excuse me, I'm Noreen Kelly. And the prior slide for that, you have 1 in 3 Navajos are diabetic or pre-diabetic. Where did you get your...
I found it on a website last night or a couple days ago.
Do you know what website?
No, I should have put that down.
Yes. IHS has one on there too.
Okay, but that's what I read. It's, they said 1 in 3.
IHS.
Comparable to the nation.
Oh, Indian Health Services? Okay.
Yes. I know that, but I think that needs to be up there.
Okay, thank you. Okay, next is, conventional agriculture, I don't know if people realize it, is a big polluter. In fact, they're saying 30 to 50% of all the CO2 that's being put in the atmosphere is coming from our food system. I don't know, how many people knew that? How many people realize that? Okay, yeah. So
I think if they don't count gasoline leakage onto the field as not organic.
No. But this is like, why do you see some said 30 to 50? It depends on what they include. When I consider the food system where you take not only the production of the food, but the harvesting, the processing, where they ship it across country to be processed, then they ship it to a center for distribution, and then it gets sent to the individual stores where it has to be kept frozen or under refrigeration. That's very inefficient. So to the point where it's like for every calorie that we eat, we're putting 10 calories of fossil fuel is burned. So basically, our food is coming from oil.
It's a loss.
Yeah. And this is another one. Look at this. What that means is 4,650 pounds of CO2 is going into the air for every person every year who is eating using conventional agriculture. Okay, that's pretty serious. But if you use permaculture, though, you can actually reverse that. You can actually save the CO2, first prevent it from getting in the atmosphere to begin with, but then actually start putting it back in the ground. So B, if we look at this next one. While I was working on this presentation, I got the latest issue of Acres magazine, and they had an article there called Healing the Earth, Regenerative Agriculture Central to Change, in which they compared our environment right now to a sinking ship. Okay, so when you look, when you think about a sinking ship, there's a hole, there's water coming in. You got to do two things. You have to plug that hole, you know, and then you got to bail the water out. So in the case of the earth right now, the environment, you got to plug the hole. You got to stop putting this CO2 in the air. You just got to stop. And then we got to get rid of it. Okay? So this is where permaculture actually comes in. So, So next B. So first of all, we got to plug the leak. So if we convert it over to these permaculture systems, we'll stop all this CO2 from going out in the air. Okay. Also, you can see that organic farming does not use synthetic fertilizers. I don't know if people realize, but when you make synthetic fertilizers, it's really energy intensive. It takes a lot of power to convert the nitrogen in the air into the fertilizer. it just takes a lot of power. So that's one of the major causes of the CO2 from conventional agriculture. And also small local farms are more efficient. So that's the plug. We can stop the extra CO2 from coming in to the system using permaculture. And then next B, by converting to bail it out, you get to start using permaculture. Organic farming actually takes CO2 out of the air. I don't know if people realize that. When you do organic farming, you're taking it out. So on the next slide, I'll show you that there was a, I don't know if you've ever heard of the Rodale Institute. They've done a study that showed where they were doing organic farming using compost, and they were able to sequester into the soil 7,300 pounds of CO2 per acre, okay? And if you were to use this system on the entire planet right now, we can sequester all that CO2 that we put in since the beginning of the Industrial Revolution in 24 years. So there is a solution.
The figure California gives you is 10,000 pounds for every acre of forest that you replant.
Yeah, so I mean, there is a result. There is a way to fix this problem. It's just, it's gonna take us to do it. Big business doesn't wanna do it because organic farming is not a big seller as far as you don't have to sell them fertilizer, you don't have to sell them all this other stuff. So you're not gonna get support from big business.
Well,
you're not gonna get support from the government.
Businesses do sell carbon dioxide. In California, you can get money for planting forests to counteract big business carbon. They will pay for you to plant back forests.
Well, that's California, but that's good for them. So I wish everyone would do that, but it's something everyone here can do. So if you want to go to the next one there. I want to put this in there because the first thing I heard a lot of people say is, well, you can't feed the world if you do. Well, that's not true because the Rodale Institute did a 30-year study. 30-year study that showed organic farming is just as productive as conventional farming. And not only that, but during drought years, 20 to 30% more productive. Okay? So don't let people say that you can't feed the world. Yeah.
I just want to address Ed's question about, you know, does permaculture work on a large scale? And the sort of the veiled issue is, well, you can't feed, you know, everyone on little organic farms. Russia now gets 70% of its produce from backyard gardens. Russia never got into the chemical thing at all when it was part of the Soviet Union. So it was very, very easy for them to take their 10,000 acre collectives, which were inefficient, and bring them back down to the farmstead level. And so in this moment, Russia gets 70% of its produce off of backyard gardens. And it's like, if you need proof that it's possible. And Russia doesn't want to import grain, you know, Earl Butz used to say, the Secretary of Agriculture Earl Butz back in the 70s used to say that food was a weapon. And what he meant was you had Midwest farmers on 1,000 and 10,000 acre operations using vertically integrated systems where they have to buy the big tractors and buy the chemicals and, you know, buy the tires for the big tractors, and all these corporations make money. And then you took that grain, and whenever there was a famine in the world, you would manipulate that country and like say, we'll send you grain, but you will do as we say. And Russia was pretty fed up with that. And so it's the statistic, just go on the internet, the statistics are all there, that it's a perfectly functioning system on a huge scale, not just a large scale.
Very good. Okay, be next. Okay, so, we're getting toward the end here. Basically, I want to say is, it's up to us. Now, everyone here can do something. You know, if you're concerned about our topsoil loss, you're concerned about our health, you're concerned about climate change, there is something you can do. And it's to look at permaculture. With permaculture, we can grow here. It is possible, okay? So what this thing is, I have like a four things here. First of all, eat local organic, okay? The local is just as important as organic, because you don't want it shipping all over the place. You're gonna try to cut back on CO2, support local farmers. If you can't afford it, because it is expensive, grow it your own. Grow your own. Even if you just do a little bit, you're helping the planet by just anything you grow. Okay, then you want to eat organic for health. You know, organic food is good for your body. Okay, support your local food producers. We got to get a local system going, so support them. And then the last one here is like recreate your local food culture. You know, we've lost a lot of this with modernization, and there's just remnants of it left. So I want to say, people think about when you go to the town in August, September, and you smell chilies roasting. That brings back, to me, that's so New Mexico. It's like we're lucky that we're one of the few places left that has some of this cultural food left. I also had some people tell me that whenever they eat or smell roasted corn, it just reminds them of, you know, their childhood. It's from growing up here. And, you know, we don't want to lose all that. So for the next slide, you can see, well, that's our four talks for today. First one is that work in beauty is how to grow. Then we're going to talk to COPE and why it's important to have healthy food. The farmer's market, we're going to talk about, you know, local food producing, and then the Dene food sovereignty on bringing back the local food culture. Okay, then I think that's it. So if you have questions. Yeah.
It's funny to mention chili and corn in a permaculture lecture when chili or corn would never survive the winter here, so wouldn't really qualify as permaculture at all here.
Yes. Permaculture is a system, as I said, to grow your food here. You want not only perennial crops, but you also have annual crops. That's all part of it. You know,
somebody has to be there to harvest it and take it in. That's not really sustainable or permanent.
I would disagree.
Some of us consider ourselves part of the environment and eat.
Okay.
Somebody has to eat the food that's grown.
Yeah.
That's what I was trying to figure out.
Okay, Jackie.
I just want to add that slide back. You were listing the things that we need to do as a community, and we've been experimenting with this. You know, organic food is expensive. Not everyone can, you know, find the time or the way to garden, but we have volunteers who come and help us harvest, and they get all the produce they want. And so if you can't have your own garden and you can't afford to buy it, we're getting small-scale farmers who can't afford to hire labor, and they really appreciate volunteers coming and helping with harvesting, and then you get direct access to eggs and chicken and, you know, anything else that's going on in whatever homestead. And I'd like to see, you know, it's been a great experiment to invite people in to help with the actual work.
I'd like to say that there's more and more interest in organic, and sometimes organic is cheaper than mass-produced other things. There's one other comment I'd like to make. It's in the article in the Mother Earth News magazine, and that I'm from California. I've been doing organic food for 20 years now, and I find that California was one of the first states to California certified organic food. At that time, the federal government was developing a national system for certifying organic food. What I remember hearing the farmers say is that they had gutted the entire process. Federal government had gutted the entire process that they used for organic food in California, which was self policed by the organic growers themselves. So this whole system just came up in the Mother Earth News, or the last one which I was reading just last night. And it was that what you're getting that is certified government, federal government, organic, is it's got so many loopholes in it, sort of like the tax code. So you're better off eating locally from the buying your produce from the people you know that are in your neighborhood, and you know them, and you see them on a weekly basis, and you know what they grow. They're way ahead of the game.
Good. So B, you want to go just like two more down? Just
forward?
Yeah, go forward. Okay, so we've talked. And then one more. So if we have any, this is our contact. You can get a hold of Work and Beauty, or you can get a hold of me if you have any questions. Any more questions? Good.
Native seed collections. I'm not just talking about native foods, but that's going to grow here. How's that been your experience? Have you used that hand in hand with your sustainability?
I tend to believe if you're a serious grower, you've learned to collect your own seeds. Because not only of a variety, like you buy a variety and there's a natural diversity within that one variety, but it will adapt to your climate, your soil. And if you save your own seeds, you know that over time, you know you're going to have a good plant that's going to like where you're growing.
Is there seed banks available?
I know there are. In my area, I know there is from the Ramos Farmers Market.
Yeah, and that's going to get, we have a seed for need program, and we have a new seed for need coordinator.
Aroma doesn't.
Yeah, I'm sure there must be others. Anyone know of? Navajo Nation must have one.
There's Native Seed Search, which is a national organization that's decentralized to different locales. So.
Oh, good.
And there's also Seed Savers Exchange.
Hmm?
And the other one would be Seed Savers Exchange. Those are the two that come up regularly. And they're very easily accessible. You can participate in those. The Seed Savers Exchange is just individuals. They make their seed available, and you get letters in the mail, and people tell you their life stories, and then you send them a packet of seeds. It's a really good program. And they're called Seed Savers Exchange. You can find it on the internet.
Okay. I have one more good question that I think my time is up. Do you have a question about?
I was just wondering if you meant more native stuff, like native wild onions or native wild permaculture that's edible, that grows wild, that you don't have to cultivate or even... I mean, you do to encourage it to grow more, but I mean, that's already existing. And there are groups that do that as well, including Greg and I and some other people, that you can get native wild New Mexico permaculture edible seeds and plants, yeah.
Okay.
Well, I think we should take those as suggestions for Work in Beauty to address some of the good things going on in Rama, some of the natural edible plants, but it's all local. I'd like to introduce, let's give